calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live 365, on cable TV systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome to our program. Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us. It's the last day of the week here. It's our traditional time to have brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the House of Representatives, reelected seven times. His website, house.bernie.gov. And Congressman Sanders, welcome.
Good. How are you, Tom?
I am great, Bernie. And you?
Good. I'm great.
I'm glad to have you here. By the way, I should just toss in our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. And if people would like to drop into our chat room, tomhartman.com, we'll get them there live chat. Bernie, I've got a short clip of Rick Santorum, and we're on the air on WPTT in Pittsburgh, so I know our Pennsylvania listeners are interested in this. And I'd just like to play, if it's okay with you, I'd like to play about 20 seconds of Rick Santorum talking about his take on the nuclear option and get your take on this. Okay, here we go. Let me fire it up.
It's the equivalent of Adolf Hitler in 1942 saying, "I'm in Paris. How dare you invade me? How dare you bomb my city? It's mine."
Now this, and then he goes on to talk about...
I get this from some of my constituents sometime when they come up to me and say, "Well, you guys are always just passing more and more laws and more and more laws." And ultimately, when you're passing laws, many cases what you're doing is restricting people's freedom. The more laws we have on the books, the more laws that are there to obey, the more laws that you have the ability to break. So why do we do this?
So it sounds to me like what he's saying, Bernie, is that the law, the Senate rules that allow the filibuster, is restricting freedom, and it has something to do with Hitler? I mean, I'm really baffled. Can you help me understand this?
Well, I think the people of Pennsylvania are going to have to try to figure this one out, and there is some evidence that they are figuring it out, that Mr. Santorum is not going to be reelected to the United States Senate. I think what we're seeing now in Washington, to say the least, are very, very interesting and strange times. It's not only Santorum getting up on the floor of the Senate comparing Democrats to Nazis. You're seeing Pat Robertson suggesting that the judges in the United States of America are more dangerous than Al-Qaeda and terrorists who attacked the United States on September 11th. And I think what we're seeing day by day is this really extremist wing of the Republican Party coming out of the caves and exerting more and more authority. And the question I think that millions of Americans are asking, moderates, honest conservatives, progressives, liberals, is where is the Republican leadership in repudiating this? How far are these guys going to go? And what concerns me, Tom, very much is when we look at what's happening in America today, it's not only serious, serious economic problems in terms of an increase in poverty, the decline of the middle class, families now, two breadwinners in a family today having less discretionary income than a one-income family 30 years ago. It's not only that we have 45 million Americans with no health insurance, increases in poverty, and so forth and so on. What is also going on in terms of the Bush administration are real fundamental attacks on basic American civil liberties, on those things that have made us a free and great country. And the list goes on and on. And every day you pick up the paper, you see something else which is just terribly frightening. Yesterday, for example, the Bush administration announced that it was pushing a plan that would significantly expand the FBI's power to demand business records in terror investigations without obtaining an approval from a judge. In other words, despite all of the furor all over this country, we've been heavily involved in this USA Patriot Act business, and we need to make major changes in the USA Patriot Act. What the Bush administration wants to do is go even further.
Right.
Then we just talked a moment ago about this, the effort on the part of the Republican leadership to destroy the filibuster in terms of judges. And what they are saying is, we have the majority. We don't care about the minority. We're going to push through anything we want, no matter how extreme these judges are, and we're prepared to break the time-honored rules of the United States Senate to do that. We're looking right now in terms of media, not only their effort to create a situation where fewer and fewer large corporations own and control what we see, hear, and read. They're now attacking public television. They've appointed a bunch of Republican operatives now who are setting up an ombudsman office to just watch and monitor what goes on public television, pushing for the first time, just really jumping right in and interfering with the whole structure of the PBS, pushing right-wing television programs right onto the PBS, attacking people like Bill Moyers, who I think has certainly been one of the brightest lights on television in many, many years, but making it very clear that they're going to politicize the PBS and make it into a right-wing station. And on it goes. So yeah. These are, you know, serious times for our country.
This morning, Bernie, I heard a report that Ken Tomlinson, who's now the chairman of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the childhood friend of Karl Rove, something that is usually not reported in the news stories. It was mentioned, you know, when it first happened, and somehow everybody seems to drop that now. But anyhow, longtime, lifelong friend of Karl Rove, Ken Tomlinson, that he had actually brought Brit Hume in from Fox News to do a seminar or workshop or training or something for the folks at either NPR or PBS about how to have fair and balanced reporting.
Right. So, I mean, there we go. We can have the PBS be converted into Fox television. But the point here is what we see time and time again is these guys do not believe in the rule of law. They have the power, and they're going to use their power to win in any way that they can. And we see this on the floor of the House. We see this by on major issues after the vote is taken. And when the Republicans lose, what they say is, oh, gee, it's regulation time. The votes have been cast by members of Congress. We lost. Well, what are we going to do? Well, we'll obviously just extend the time. And that gets us back to that Medicare prescription drug bill, that horrendous bill. Mm-hmm. It took them 3 hours after regulation time to twist enough arms to get the vote. I had an amendment which would make some very positive changes in the USA Patriot Act. At the end of regulation time, we had won that vote by 10 votes. And what Tom DeLay did is said, well, we're not happy with those results. We'll just keep the voting machines open for another 20 minutes so we can twist some arms. And they did, and we lost on a 210-210 tie. These guys, I mean, and what is just very scary, you know, in politics, sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. That's the nature of the game. But what these guys say is, hey, we don't intend to lose. And if it means changing the rules, that's what we're going to do. It's like a basketball game. At the end of four quarters, your team is losing. What's the response? Well, we'll play another quarter until we win. So it's these are frightening times, I think, in many respects.
Did you see the report in Ad Age about Morgan Stanley? Morgan Stanley, now the big financial firm, is suggesting that they're going to financially punish any publications that, I mean, this is not their language, but this is the effect of it. David Sirota, in fact, with the Center for American Progress notes, the financial firm Morgan Stanley is essentially letting publications know that they will be financially punished if those publications have the nerve to aggressively cover corporate scandals.
Wow.
They're going to pull their advertising from publications that look into corporate malfeasance.
Right. Well, what these guys do is they have the money and they have the power, and they're intending to use that money and use that power to push their agenda at any cost. And if it means making major attacks on our way of life and the freedoms that we hold, they will do it. You know, we hear a whole lot of talk about religion and moral values from these guys. In my view, in many respects, the religion of many of these guys is greed and greed and greed. And if it means destroying Social Security in order to make more money for Wall Street, if it means charging the American people the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, if it means giving tax breaks to billionaires and cutting back on Medicaid and cutting back on veterans' needs and cutting back on affordable housing, that's what they will do. And the bottom line of all of this is that if you look at the polling now, this administration, and the reason they have to do this, is that their ideology, their agenda is extremely unpopular with the American people. The American people do not support tax breaks for billionaires. in cutting back on the needs of ordinary Americans. They do not support the destruction of Social Security. So what these guys are doing in order to push an unpopular agenda is just using all of the power that they have, using the alliance they have with corporate America and big money interests, and we have got to fight back as vigorously as we can. And there's some, in the midst of all of this scary business, there is some good news. And that is, I think that not only are the American people, but even members of Congress, even a number of Republicans, are beginning to understand that the so-called unfettered free trade, which has been pushed on this country for the last several decades, has been a disaster for American workers. And what you're seeing now is rising opposition to our trade relations with China, which has resulted in a $160 billion trade deficit and the loss of millions of decent-paying jobs. The Bush administration, as many listeners know, is now trying to peddle this Central American Free Trade Agreement, so-called CAFTA, on Congress. And you know what? Oh, for the first time, I'm happy to say that the Democrats are almost 100% united in opposition. That wasn't always the case. And now what you're seeing is more and more Republicans who are saying, hey, we're going home to our districts. Free trade is not working. We don't want any more of this stuff. We're losing good-paying manufacturing jobs. We're losing information technology jobs. We got to rethink this. So I think in some respects, people are catching up to this administration, and that's a good sign.
There was a fascinating piece in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, Bernie, that talked about how Spain, in the midst of Europe kind of melting down, as it were, all the European countries, many of the Western democracies of Europe, you know, France, Germany, England, Italy, are all seeing a decrease in their growth rates. They're fairly marginal right now because they've been embracing free trade. They've been embracing conservative economic policies just for the last decade or so, basically. And it's hurting them. It's biting them. Spain, in the last 14 months, has turned around and said, no, we're going to go in a different direction. And they're raising taxes. They're investing in education. They're investing in their infrastructure, and they're putting up barriers to trade to protect their domestic industries. And they just reported that they're seeing 3% economic growth, whereas Italy is like 0.9% and Germany is 1%. Spain has seen the results of this. It's just what we saw in the United States from the 30s to the 70s to 1980 when Reagan started reversing this. That you know, we had liberal economic policies and we birthed the middle class.
Right. I mean, what happened from the end of World War II to the early 1970s is what we saw is, yeah, the rich got richer, but the middle class did very well. The poor did very well. But what we're seeing now in this country, and it is not talked about enough, is a movement toward an oligarchy where, while poverty increases, the richest people in this country have never had it so good.
Yeah, absolutely. Our telephone number, if you'd like to talk with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Tom Hartman here with you on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Just take what you need. Don't empty out this book.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, our regular Friday afternoon segment. CUDA in Virginia is on the line. Our telephone number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, CUDA.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Congressman Sanders.
Good morning.
Two quick items. I'll deal with them as quick as I can. The first item is I'm being redeployed to Iraq my second time tomorrow, and I'll ask you both, as well as all your listeners, keep up the pressure. Help me get my men and women home safely, please.
Yes,
Congressman Sanders, I've been hearing about this compromise that Senator Reid has struck with the Antifrist, and I can't believe that we're compromising on with five judges, given that we've got them on the run. The latest Pew poll published yesterday shows that a majority of Americans disagree with the congressional action We've got the Bush approval rating at an all-time low. Even Fox News is in a spin dive. And it seems to me the momentum is shifting. But here we are. We have the Democrats caving. Do you think that this compromise is as wimpy as I think it is?
Well, let me just start off with your first point, Kuda. And, you know, obviously all of us wish you the very best and hope you come back safely as quickly as possible. In my view, as somebody who led the opposition to giving Bush the authority to go to war in the first place, I think the time is now for the president to give exit strategy. The men and women over there, their families, and the American people have a right to know how much longer our young men and women are going to be dying, how many more billions of dollars we are going to be spending. And I think that as soon as possible, we have got to start the process of bringing our troops back home. I'm very proud that in my own state of Vermont, at March meeting, when we have town meetings, that's what the people of Vermont said. And I think they're speaking for people all over this country. In terms of what's going on in the Senate right now, there is no question that poll after poll is telling us that the American people are furious with what the Republican leadership are doing. My hope is that the Democrats remain very strong. I can't give them internal advice, but I hope that they remain very, very strong in protecting the filibuster, which is one of the very important rules protecting the minority in the U.S. Senate.
Okay. Thanks. Kuda, got it? Thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks, gentlemen. Take care.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Harold in Manchester, Vermont on the line. Hey, Harold.
How you doing? Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'll try to be quick. I'll try to form this in a question. Bernie,
yeah.
Great privilege to talk to you without having to put a few thousand dollars in the old coffer. Very rare we get to speak person to mano a mano to our representatives. Listen, I've had a lot for a long time.
Hey, Harold, I just had the toss in here. I lived in Vermont for 10 years, and Bernie was showing up all over the place, and I saw him speak a whole bunch of times and never gave him a nickel.
We do dozens and dozens of town meetings. In fact, we're doing one tomorrow night.
I'm not talking about you, Bernie. I'm talking about other representatives.
Good. Yeah. Forgive me. Yeah. Okay.
And it is hard to get one-on-one because of your time. That's all I'm saying. I'm not... I didn't mean to start a conflict here. As a matter of fact, I wanted to say I like you consider myself an independent. I like you find myself voting with the Democrats a lot. Simply because they're just, you know, in a two-party system it's really hard to be independent, but I think of myself that way. Anyways, what I'd like to get to is some things about Democrats. You know, the Democratic Party.
Harold, yep. We've got about 10 seconds if you can toss your question.
Anyway, I'd like to hear more about the Democrats, some of the good things they've done. In history, in the past, Democrats really did some wonderful things. Why don't we hear about that once in a while, some of the good things that have been done in the past. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
We'll take a shot at that, Bernie, when we come back from this break. Thank you, Harold, for the call. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. If you'd like to be on, our telephone number 1-866-889-8894. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. I could break away.
And welcome back, friends, to the real free speech zone. No barbed wire, no cages, no RNC pass required. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us for the hour. If you'd like to talk with Bernie, the toll-free number 1-866-889-8894. Bernie's website, bernie.house.gov. And Bernie, there's also Bernie, is it bernie.org or Bernie?
Yes, that's right.
Bernie.org, also a website for Bernie's other political activities, as it were, if you want to check that out. Let's go back to the phone lines here. Patrick in Madison, Wisconsin on the line. Hey, Patrick.
Hey there. How goes it?
Good. What's up?
I Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm on my cell phone. I want to make sure I can be heard. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention some of the things I've done to knock Junior Bush and Tricky Dick Cheney. One of the things is I had a load of manure spreaders fresh from the factory. So on my way to deliver them, I put a little sign on the back. It read, George Bush Limo.
Okay.
You like that one?
Yeah, that's a good one. Patrick, you had a question for Bernie?
Oh, I was just wondering how we're going to stop Junior and his new takeover of the judiciary, you know, and get all those right-wingists in the on the benches. How can we stop them?
Yeah, decent question.
Well, I think what is happening is up to now, and this is very good news, the Democrats in the Senate have remained very, very strong and united on this issue. That is not always the case. And I think the other thing that's going on is the American people are catching on very big time to the abuse of power that the Republican leadership is exercising on a dozen different issues, and the American people don't like it. So I think the Democrats in the Senate now understand that they have the support of the American people, and hopefully they're going to hang tight, and hopefully the Republican leadership will understand that you don't break time-honored rules in the United States Senate, that you don't abuse power, and that you don't just try to shove judges through the process who do not deserve to hold their seats.
So it sounds like the bottom line is you're saying let's hope and encourage the Democrats in the Senate to hold to draw the line, stand firm, and
to their credit, they are. Believe me, there's tremendous pressure on some of the conservative Democrats to break ranks. But
yeah.
On this issue and on Social Security, what we're seeing for a change is the Democrats are united and they're holding fast, and that's a good sign.
Good on them. Okay, Nate in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Nate.
Hi, how you doing? I love your program. Thanks a lot for it. I was just going to say these corporate-owned pseudo-religious right-wing fascists in Congress and their whole filibuster thing, one of the ironies there is if you look at the etymology of filibuster, it goes back to freebooter, which is basically a pirate. And it's kind of ironic that these are these people who are trying to quote-unquote stop the filibuster, but they're the actual ones pirating our Constitution. So it's a pretty interesting. Actually, you were talking about Spain. The word comes from a Dutch word, and then goes to English, and then to Spain, and then back to English again as filibuster. So, and my question for Bernie was, how can we help with his campaign? I hear he might be running for Senate.
Thank you very much, Nate. Going to be running for the United States Senate. It's too early to announce formally, but I've told the people of the state of Vermont that that is my intention. We have a website, which is www.bernie.org, and people get more information there.
Great. Thanks for the call, Nate. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Margaret in Asheville. Asheville, is it North Carolina or South Carolina, Margaret?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Thank you.
Yes, up in the Blue Ridge Mountains.
There you go.
We're, of course, a state that's all Republican now. I have two questions, particularly one I heard last night that Bush Jr. has signed an executive order that authorizes $600 billion for this militarization of space. Is this true?
No, he hasn't signed an executive order to do that. I think this is something that the Pentagon is pushing.
Yeah.
But no, that has to go through Congress and so forth. There will be a lot of debate about that.
Thank God. What I've been trying to research executive orders, and I believe that this administration, for the last 5 years that they've been in power, have really abused these to the point where do they literally hold legal standing?
Well, sometimes they do. I think you're right. I don't have the information in front of me, but I would. My understanding is, in fact, that they have used executive orders a whole lot.
Yeah, particularly to get around regulations and administrative things.
Right.
Margaret, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you, and thanks for listening to us there in North Carolina. And thanks for holding the flag in North Carolina, keeping the blue banner flying. Okay, good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Sonny in Kentucky on the line. Hey, Sonny.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good.
Hey, I appreciate your program, Congressman. I appreciate your time. I'm going to be very quick. I know you guys got bills to pay and stuff like that, but a longtime Democrat, and of course Kentucky is going to be probably going to stay a red state for a while. But I'm trying to do as much as I can. What I'm curious is how Howard Dean's plan or agenda for the DNC, how he plans to combat Karl Rove's. You know, Karl Rove's a great. I mean, any way you put it, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, man, this guy's got so much power, so much, you know, thought influence with the Bush administration. What are we going to do to combat that? Well, and does Howard Dean have a agenda set out to do that?
Well, Sonny,
without
not,
stooping to his level.
Right. I'm not the best guy in the world because I'm not a Democrat, but I know Dean fairly well, and Dean is a very bright guy. And I think what his strategy is to build a strong grassroots movement. The advantages that the Republicans have are severalfold. First of all, they have unlimited sums of money from large corporations and the wealthiest people in this country. Second of all, they have the support of the corporate media. And third of all, as Sonny just indicated, they will stoop to a level that many decent people just are not going to go. We're not going to lie about people and just put the most ugly and negative ads on television trying to destroy people based on a whole tissue of lies. And that's what they do. And you're not going to do telephone chain calls, which just spread the worst kind of gossip. You remember, I mean, way back what George Bush did to John McCain during the primary when McCain was contesting Bush in the first election that Bush won. We're not going to do that. But I think the antidote to that is for people, and it sounds like Sonny is doing it in Kentucky, is for working people and middle-class people to understand that they have no choice now. If they're concerned about their kids and their grandchildren, they've got to be involved in the political process. We've got to develop a progressive agenda on almost all of the issues. I don't care if it's Kentucky or Massachusetts or Vermont. Most Americans do not believe you give tax breaks to billionaires and you cut back on education, on health care, and the needs of our veterans. Growing concern about the war in Iraq and the need to bring our troops home as soon as possible. Tremendous anger, regardless of one's political persuasion, about Bush's disastrous environmental policies. People cannot believe that in the middle of a health care crisis, this guy is cutting back, wants to cut back $60 billion on Medicaid. Tax on civil liberties. The vast majority of the American people do not agree with Bush's agenda. And our job is to go out and talk to them and understand that maybe on every issue we're not going to be in agreement. But we've got to mobilize the American people and let them understand that we're fighting for the future of the middle class, whether or not it's going to survive. And I think if we do that, we're going to make a huge change in the political complexion of this country.
Well said. Kenny in Baltimore on the line. Hey, Kenny, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's going on, Tom? How you doing, Bernie?
Good.
Hey, I got a two-part question. One part, I wanted to ask you, what did you think about the speech that Galloway gave into the Senate, and can we expect to see something like that from the Democrats? And also, I wanted to know when y'all do get back into power, because y'all will be back in power pretty soon. I mean, is we going to close up a lot of these loopholes that Republicans use to get this power that they got now?
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Kenny. I mean, I think when the Republicans lose power, which we all hope, well, most of us, I think, hope will be much sooner than later, there's an enormous amount of work to be done. And I think Kenny is right that we want to address a number of issues and deal with some of the terrible things that the Republicans have been doing in the last number of years. And for a start, I think that we have got to, as a nation, join the rest of the industrialized world and make sure that every American has a right of citizenship, is entitled to health care. We can no longer ignore the issue of growing poverty in America and the fact that we're losing decent-paying jobs and replacing them with Walmart-type low-wage jobs. We have to address a increasingly regressive tax system, which has given tax breaks to billionaires. And yet, in the long run, middle-class people are paying even more because as cuts in federal government take place, the states and local communities have to pick up more of the burden. Bottom line is, Kenny, in my view, what the Democrats have got to do is make it very clear. They are on the side of the middle class, working people,
lower-income people, and they're going to make government work for the vast majority of the people rather than the richest 1 or 2%, which is currently the case. And when you do that, and when you stand up tall, and when ordinary people know which side you are on, then you're going to do well politically.
Yeah, well said. Okay, thank you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bill in Iowa, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Congressman and Tom. I just am sitting here listening to you as I'm driving down the road on Sirius, but anyway, what has happened to the icons in the political arena, the Hubert Humphreys and the people like that that built the system that protected the people in the United States? I've been a Republican all my life, but I did not vote and could not vote for George Bush. Everything that they're doing is eroding the living standard of this country and changing the economic base of the people that founded and elected them, and they continue to absolutely ignore that and push on with their own agendas that are doing nothing but making the rich richer in this country and making our allies turn their noses and destroying our image throughout the world. Yeah. Why can't one of the parties come up with a candidate and groom a candidate and then establish a base and a platform for them to run on that can reestablish a political party, be it Democrat or independent, that can get some strength and help manage this country back to some sensibility that we've had for many, many years?
Well, I mean, Bill just said it, I mean, better than I. And thank you very much, Bill. And I want to tell Bill and the many other Republicans who I'm sure are listening to this show, one of the distressing things that is taking place in Washington right now is that there are a lot of Republicans in the House who do not agree with Tom DeLay. They do not agree with the extreme right-wing nature of Bill Frist. But they have been silent. They have not stood up, with the exception of Vermont Senator Jim Jeffords, who showed an enormous amount of courage. Jim, I have known for many, many years, and Jim is a moderate Republican. And what he said is, the party, Republican Party, has left me. They have moved to the extreme right, and I can't stay in that party anymore. And one of the distressing aspects of politics in Washington is there are a lot of people who know exactly what Bill is saying to be true. The Republican Party has moved to the right. Their job now is only to represent the wealthy and the powerful. They're deserting so many of the traditions and beliefs that have made us a great country. And I would hope that millions of moderate Republicans will begin to stand up to the Tom DeLays and the Bill Frists and say, give us our party back. We are not extreme right-wingers. We're not anti-science. We're not people who, you know, want to antagonize the whole world by arrogant foreign policy. So I very much appreciate what Bill had to say.
And not just where are the Hubert Humphreys, where are the Everett Dirksons? I mean, we need them on both sides. Bob in Indianapolis on the line. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Bernie. Tom, I just wanted to tell you, I live in Fairborn, Ohio. I'm an over-road truck driver. I consider myself a conservative Democrat. You know Worthy, you know Edie. But, you know, the things that are, you guys are fantastic. I live my day so that I can listen to you guys.
Thank you.
But this is going, the things that are going on in this country right now in this day and age are complete, it's going too far. And, you know, I worry myself to death about my grandkids, my kids, not so much me. I'm 57 years old. What's on the table I've already made for myself, but I worry about the rest of them. But what I really worry about, all the things that we're talking about right now, it's all true, but the thing that I worry about is even with the next election, unless we do something with these voting machines, we don't stand a chance. We can talk all we want, but as long as they can rig these voting machines, we're hurting.
Okay, well, Bob makes that I know that Tom has written about and thought about a whole lot. We have talked about on the show, and what Bob is saying is that when people in the United States vote, they 100% must have confidence that their vote is going to be counted. And there is a lot of concern about these touchscreen machines, the fact that there are no paper trails. And this is an issue we are working on in Congress right now, and I know that it is being worked on in state legislatures throughout America. If America means anything, if democracy means anything, there has to be 100% assurance that when you vote, your vote is counted, and the candidate that gets the most votes win. And I think just getting back to Bob's point, and it's interesting, Tom, you know, we're hearing from moderate Republicans, conservative Democrats, and I think there is a coming together in this country. Yeah, sure, I'm not a conservative Democrat, I'm not a moderate Republican, but on so many issues, people are coming together to say that this Bush administration and his right-wing leadership allies in the Congress are so far to the right that they are just not talking for ordinary Americans anymore. And that's a good thing. I think people are beginning to come together, put aside some of their differences.
Yeah, I know you wouldn't say it, but I will. They are so far to the right, it's starting to seem like the Reich, and that concerns me, with these attacks on civil liberties and our adventurism around the world. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie. We will be back with your phone calls right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. We have just a few minutes left and quite a few calls for Congressman Sanders, so I'm going to ask folks to keep it short. Lynn Landis is calling from Philadelphia. Hey, Lynn Landis, the famous voting machine expert, eh?
Yeah, well, yes, infamous perhaps. I did want to make a comment about the voting machines and the legislation very quickly. The ballot scanners, 99% of all votes are processed using some sort of machine, maybe 13% lever. Everything else are ballot scanners or the touchscreen. Those machines are owned by the same people pretty much. I mean, it's Diebold, ESNS, and a few others. So that regardless of whether your vote is processed, whether you have a paperless touchscreen or your vote is scanned by these optical scanners, it's the same corporations that are...
Lynn, we talk about this on the program a lot. We can't do a seminar on this. Bernie's on the line.
Is
there a question for Congressman Sanders?
Well, yes. I mean, why isn't the congressional legislation for ballot printer, why isn't that calling for these ballots to be counted? Because none of that legislation is calling for the ballots to be counted.
Okay, good one. Lynn, Bernie?
I'm not quite clear.
I think what she's saying is that Rush Holt's bill, which you're a co-sponsor of, says generate a paper ballot. But it doesn't say then count the paper ballot. It says that the machine is doing the count, and that's her suggestion is that the paper ballot should.
Well, that's a good. We'll talk to Rush about it. But we're working hard on his bill, which will in itself be a major step forward in providing a paper trail, so that at least we'll have some paper there in the event of a recount.
Although I think Lynn makes a good point that the ballot should be the ballot. Ron in Lubbock, Texas, is on the line. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. What's up?
It's a privilege to talk to you. I wanted to talk to you about the real ID that they tacked onto the appropriations bill.
Yep.
What are we going to be able to do to kind of nullify that or to remove it, or is there some way we can pass legislation to kill this thing?
We sure can try. A very legitimate concern that Ron has, and this is the movement toward a national ID, and with the technology out there, I mean, they're going to have your whole life story, they're going to know where you're going. It is a very ominous development, and I agree with your concerns about it.
And do you think that there will be a court challenge to this, Bernie?
I suspect that there will be.
Yeah, so it'd be good to see that. I mean, this is very concerning, particularly with the RFID chip, where if you're walking around with one of these things, driver's license with one of these chips, and they can just scan the crowd and know who's in the crowd.
That's exactly right.
I mean, this is 1984 revisited. Congressman Bernie Sanders, bernie.house.gov or bernie.org, if you want to check him out on the web. Thanks so much for being with us, Congressman Sanders.
Good to be with you, Tom. Take care.
Have a good one, Bernie.
Bye.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. The place where smart people get their news. The radio support group of, by, and for We the People.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to Tom Hartman Radio Program. Where tuning in is as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker. Even easier, actually. Welcome back to our program. Glad to have you with us. Our telephone number, 1-866, toll-free, 1-866-889-8894. The chat room, if you want to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat, and that will get you there. And, boy, with a lot in the news, I want to get back to George Galloway, kind of review the week. If you want to call about pretty much any topic, Friday afternoon, anything you want to talk about. But I've got a pile here that we're going to go through. But first, let's take a few phone calls. Lodi, is it Lodi in Oklahoma?
Hey there, Tom. Congressman Bernie said something about a senator from Vermont that said to the Republican Party that it's changed so much that he wants to move away from it. My question is, what happens if a Republican in the House or in the Senate decides to go to the Democratic Party? Does he keep his seat as a Republican, or does it change to a Democratic Party seat?
What happened, Bernie was speaking about Jim Jeffords. And
yes.
And Jim Jeffords was a Republican, a lifelong Republican, still, you know, he's still in the United States Senate. And mm-hmm. in 2001 or 2000 or early 2002, anyhow, it was I believe it was 2001 when Bush started just moving to the extreme right after campaigning as a moderate, as a compassionate conservative. Jim Jeffords simply said, no, that's it. I'm leaving the party. And so what happened was the Republicans lost a seat, as it were. That threw control of the Senate back to the Democrats, even though Jim Jeffords didn't become a Democrat. He became an independent like Bernie is. He was caucusing, what's called caucusing with the Democrats. In other words, he was voting with the Democrats. He was speaking on their side. So they essentially took power in the Senate. But he was, you know, he's still there, and he could run again if he wanted to, although he's getting quite elderly, and that's why his health and his wife's health, he's decided not to run again, and Bernie's going to be running for his seat. In fact, here is a clip of Jim Jeffords on Vermont Public Radio. This is just from about a month ago, talking about George W. Bush. And keep in mind, this is a man who for, you know, 50, 60 years, his life, you know, his adult life, was a Republican and ran for multiple offices as a Republican. Here's Jim Jeffords.
But does the situation now in Iraq...
First of all, a question from the Vermont Public Radio questioner.
But does the situation now in Iraq essentially show that he made the right decision?
I don't believe so. I was against it at the beginning, and I'm still against what invading Iraq. I think it's created huge problems. I feel that we... should never have gone in there. I think it was all done to get oil. I think that's the end result is going to be some oil agreement, and to the loss of life that we had and to the cost of it was to me just a re-election move, and they're going to try to live off it and probably start another war. Wouldn't be surprised next year, probably in Iran.
Do you think that's likely?
Well, I probably shouldn't even talk on it. I just feel so bitter about the thinking that's gone on behind them and the reasons they go to war and went to war. But I feel very strongly that they're looking ahead, and that there'll be an opportunity to go into Iran and try to get their son elected president. I don't know, but they'll do it each time they when I have a new president. I'm very, very, yes. Oh, well, I better be quiet.
He's speaking there of the elder Bush and the possibility of Jeb becoming president next time around. So, anyhow, Lodi, did I answer your question?
Yeah, so if you're a Republican and you decide to move over to the Democratic Party, you will lose that seat as a Republican seat, correct?
You still hold the seat, but the Republican Party loses the seat as
That's
a seat
I mean,
representing
yeah.
the party. Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah.
hope we get more of those people moving over from the Republican Party. That
well,
would be lovely.
Start contacting your United States Senator and encouraging them. You can reach any member of the United States Senate by simply calling 1-877, toll-free, 1-877-SOB, the letter U-S-O-B. It's the old Senate office building phone number. That's what the SOB stands for, 1-877-SOB-USOB, and it'll get you to your senator.
So, thank you, Tom.
Sure enough. Thanks for calling, Lodi. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Ann in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi. I keep hearing everything these days from the Republicans and from Bush about the war on terror. I'd like to know what happened to the war on drugs. Less than 2 miles from my house, I'm a realtor, and I went to go look at a property for a gentleman to list and sell. There's a crack house. He told me that, but they're in the street dealing drugs right in front of this house. I didn't even feel comfortable to get out to look at it. Called him up and said, do you know this is going on in the street? And he said, yes, I've called the police 3 or 4 times because my tenants keep complaining in my house, rental house, about this. And he says, they aren't doing anything.
Well,
and
what happened, Bill Clinton put 100,000 extra police on the streets and George Bush took them off because he couldn't afford them because he had to have tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires.
Well, my big question is, we're supposedly spend all this extra money, though, on Homeland Security. Can't they do something about securing the borders from all the drugs crossing into here? Because this is ridiculous.
No, they can't. I agree with you. It's ridiculous. And no, they can't. They've actually cut back on that kind of funding. They've cut back on community enforcement, police enforcement programs. They are not securing our borders. Afghanistan last year produced more heroin than any than it had ever done in history, and it was the largest opium poppy crop in the history of the world for any country. Oh, Afghanistan has now become a total failed narco state, and it's run, of course, by Hamid Karzai, who was the former Unocal oil company executive who was negotiating with Afghanistan to put an oil pipeline across there on behalf of that company that had business relationships with Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld back when they were in the private sector, and now he's the head of Afghanistan, and now they're building the oil pipeline or the gas pipeline, but they're also exporting heroin like crazy. And you got crack coming in, you got cocaine coming in from South America, you got meth labs being built all over here. Here in Portland, where I'm broadcasting from, they're having a terrible problem with a methamphetamine epidemic. No, it's the Bush administration has said, essentially, tough luck to the communities, to the cities, to the counties and the towns. Tough luck.
And I'm in a county where a majority of the voters are registered Republicans, and the kids in 6th and 7th grades are having problems with drug dealers and stuff.
Yep.
I have real issues with what's going on in this country.
Bush's answer to it is let the free market take care of it. If we just turn everything over to the big corporations and the lobbyists, everything will be just fine.
Well, it's a free market out in the street for drug dealers. That's
exactly
what it is.
Exactly it is.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, Ann. And it is infuriating. I got to say, it is infuriating. And, welcome to Bush World. Logan in New York City on the line. Hey, Logan, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I was just wondering why certain progressive groups like Move On and stuff, since they're not really reporting the news, have actually just taken out and, basically put ads on television reporting.
Reporting what?
The news that actually is not reported.
They're not doing
like
it because they can't afford to do it, the bottom line. I mean, it's very expensive to buy advertising on television, number one. And secondly, my guess is that there's a lot of things that if they tried to report in advertising, the big corporate-owned media simply would refuse to take the ads.
Well, I mean, it seems like some way to getting onto the television. They allow it during political campaigns. I don't understand how they would be able to do that.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, no, it's what we need to do, Logan, instead of encouraging these guys to, like, buy advertising time with ad messages, is to encourage them to do things like supporting Amy Goodman's program, Democracy Now!, is a great morning news program. I have some serious concerns about the future of public radio and public television in the United States, which is one of the last bastions, somewhat, of truth-telling in the United States. I mean, it's been badly contaminated by corporate sponsorships over the last 2 decades, but, ever since Reagan. But nonetheless, it's still hanging on by their fingernails, and supporting progressive talk radio like this program and Air America's programs and Jones programs, Ed Schultz and Stephanie Miller, those kinds of things. You know, those are the pressure points. Those are the new leverage points. And supporting progressive media. There's some great websites out there that are worthy of support. So those are the areas that I would say that they should be putting their attention.
No TV. We should just abandon TV.
Well, no, actually, you know, Keith Olbermann, of all things, on MSNBC is actually doing a pretty good job of reporting much of the news that nobody else covers, which has really amazed me that they, you know, he's been getting away with that and his ratings are climbing. And I think that the more that people say, and Fox's ratings are in a tailspin. They're down more than 50% now in the last year. I mean, they're just falling off the edge of the earth. People are stopping. They're no longer watching Fox. They're migrating back over to CNN and to MSNBC and to.
Well, they canceled Dennis Miller. I think.
Yeah, that was I think CNBC was the
news. Canceled them, yeah.
Yep, yep. So, you know, what's happening is that America's waking up and they're saying, you know, these guys, they're nuts. These right wingers, they're nuts. You know, and we don't want the kind of world that they're trying to create for us. A world, you know, where the middle class has been wiped out, where you've got nothing but the working poor. That's and you've got crack houses on the corners and you got billionaires and living in gated communities. That's not the world that we want. We'd like to have a middle class in America. We'd like our democracy back. Logan, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Richard, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Richard, what's up? Oh, got to push the button there. Hey, Richard.
I have a question. I've been buying the Almanac the last 2 years now. I'm worried about how can I find what the truth is anymore. You know, we can't believe the newspapers. We can't believe magazines. You know, depends what your point of view is on something, and that's the truth. Is there some sources of information I can point to a Republican say, see, here's the problem in black or white? I mean, where do we go to find out the facts or the truth or the unvarnished truth, as it were?
Well, this is the problem that free people have always had, Richard. In the United States, traditionally, from the founding of this country until about 30 years ago, very few newspapers, other than the New York Times, by and large, which always considered itself the newspaper of record, very few newspapers ever tried to say, hey, we're giving you just the straight story. That you would, you know, I grew up in Michigan, and in Michigan you had the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News, and one was the business paper and the other was the labor paper. And you got the news with a spin, but you knew what the spin was in advance. And what has happened as a result of all this media and so, you know, if you read both sides, you can make up your mind, because everybody had an opportunity to get their stories out there, and you could figure out for yourself what the truth was or what your truth was. But what happened with all this media consolidation is that eventually we had so few channels for information where, for example, you've got like Gannett, you know, owning newspapers all over the United States, little community newspapers, that now newspapers are trying to say, and radio stations, TV stations, oh, we're not biased, we're just telling you the straight story. And then they don't, because they're afraid to antagonize the administration, for example. I think that, frankly, we need to go back to the days of people saying, here's what our bias is, and we're right up front about it. I think what Fox News is doing is great, and it also needs to be done on the left. Here's the news with a political spin. And I'm sure that's not what you expected to hear, but that's historically how it happened. You had the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers back in Jefferson's time, the people who loved him and the people who hated him. Well, I think we need to go back to that and have that. We need to be having discussions and dialogue rather than, you know, monologues. Does that make sense, Richard?
Well, I got mistaken. I got by the New York Times.
Yeah, it's a start. Check out their website also. They've got, you know, it's fairly decent news. Thanks a lot.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. What gives you the right, hey you, to stand there and tell me what to do? Tell me what gave you.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. In just a minute, we'll be getting back to your calls. But first, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, our report from Washington, D.C. for the day. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hey, today, it's kind of interesting. The president actually, he was at a Catholic prayer breakfast. Well, at the same time he's done this, the American Life League is having a press conference on Monday where they're going to say that there are liberal Catholic theologians who are allowing Teddy Kennedy and John Kerry to receive communion, even though they have a pro-abortion stance.
Yes, and we know that Cardinal Ratzinger wrote the letter to all the bishops here saying, don't do that.
Right, and they're taking a full-page ad out of the Washington Times. Other publications, and this is going to hit the road on Monday, with a huge picture of Teddy Kennedy, and they say that he is a Catholic who supports abortion, and they're quoting, those who obstinately persist in manifestly grave sin are not able to be admitted to communion.
Why don't they talk about the fact that the Pope was so opposed to George Bush going into this war?
Or the Pope is opposed to the death penalty and tried to stop George Bush from that.
Yeah. I don't get it, Ellen. I just don't get it.
There's got to
be a political agenda here, not just a religious agenda.
Speaking of Catholics and all that kind of thing, also the president today, through his spokesperson, and Scott McClellan was gone, so was Trent Duffy, said that his position on stem cell research is that he's worried about a world in which cloning becomes acceptable, and that he was clear on embryonic stem cells, and therefore he would veto the bill that is happening by Republican Mike Castle of Delaware, and he would support, it looks like, the Representative Chris Smith bill, which of course has delayed support, and only 41 sponsors, as opposed to the Castle bill, which has 2,001 sponsors. Now, it's
you mean 201?
I'm thinking 2,001, and it's 201, yes.
Yeah.
And what's so amazing is that offshore, this is all going on. So the United States is going to be totally behind in the research.
Right. It's like, the world is flat. We don't need no stinking science.
Exactly.
It's like we're going into the Dark Ages. It's what happened in Europe, when the church took over in Europe.
Now, next week, the White House has announced that it is going to be Terrorism Week, both at home and abroad. He's meeting with President Karzai of Afghanistan early in the week, and then, of course, later in the week, he's going to be meeting with some other types that he thinks promote our international security issues. So that's going to be interesting. And also, Howard Dean is having a huge interview this weekend. He's going to be appearing on Meet the Press. The RNC said, Dean is like a box of chocolates. You just never know what you're going to get. And they are doing, Republicans are doing a 48-hour countdown until Dean gets on Meet the Press.
they should be careful what they wish for.
Right.
Because Howard Dean is one smart guy.
And he
speaks truth to power.
You got to hear this one. When Afghan President Karzai comes on Monday, he said that he wants to throw out the first pitch at a baseball game between Boston Red Sox and the Atlanta Braves.
Well, he's an old consultant for an American oil company. He lived in the United States. He used to work for Unocal. So why shouldn't he be interested in baseball?
It just is totally amazing.
Yeah.
But that's where Karzai, who has absolutely no ability whatsoever to manage what's going on in Afghanistan, other than Kabul. We call him the mayor of Kabul.
Yeah.
And one other thing.
But,
by the way, the Minneapolis Star Tribune reports that Al Franken has bought a townhouse in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I'd heard that was coming. Ellen, thanks so much for being with us. I do appreciate it. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We'll call you when you're 6 years old and drag you to the factory.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live 365 on American FM. and in 29 states on cable TV systems with CRN Digital. Lest we forget from the week, George Galloway.
I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq. And I told the world that your case for the war was a pack of lies. I told the world that Iraq, contrary to your claims, did not have weapons of mass destruction. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to Al-Qaeda. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to the atrocity on 9/11/2001. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that the Iraqi people would resist a British and American invasion of their country, and that the fall of Baghdad would not be the beginning of the end, but merely the end of the beginning. Senator, in everything I said about Iraq, I turned out to be right, and you turned out to be wrong. And 100,000 people have paid with their lives, 1,600 of them American soldiers, sent to their deaths on a pack of lies.
George Galloway, Member of Parliament from the United Kingdom, visiting the United States, speaking with the Republican Senator, United States Senator Norm Coleman, soon to be replaced, I suspect, by Al Franken. Mark, it's time for our Best of the Rest of the News segment. We have a bunch of callers here on the line. We have, for our Best of the Rest of the News, we bring in some editors from some of the top websites and talk about what's going on for the week. Mark Carlin is with us. He's the editor and founder of BuzzFlash.com. And Jeff Milchen, who is the founder of ReclaimDemocracy.org, a national grassroots organization working to restore citizen authority, and also WalmartFacts.biz. Jeff and Mark, hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Mark. Hey, Jeff.
Howdy.
Howdy. Both of you are with me, and our phone lines have just been slammed all day. I mean, it's just been solid nonstop, and I've got a whole bunch of callers here on the line. Yeah, what I'd like to do with this segment, if it's okay with both of you, because I think we all kind of know what the top news is let's take some of these calls and let you guys bounce off our callers rather than just me. Is that all right with you guys?
You're the boss.
Okay. All righty. First, let's go to Harriet in Seattle here. Hey, Harriet. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. A couple of things. One, since we have these guys on who have websites, I'll direct to them. I'm finding, since I teach computers, a lot of people coming into it are not computer literate. They do not have computers. My neighbor down the street is in his 80s. By the way, Tom, I loaned him your What Would Jefferson Do book, and he said it was the best one he had ever read. He wants to hear more of you. I said, fine, get on the web, which we both laughed. Not everybody out there has a computer. Not everybody out there is computer literate. And I think we need to find some other sources of getting through to people rather than just saying, go to the web.
Okay. Your thoughts on this, Mark, for example?
We do have a digital divide in this country. In fact, if you go back to the beginning of the net, it was mostly dominated by white male Republicans. The progressives came to it a bit late, pretty much after the impeachment effort at Clinton. So you're absolutely right. We do need to find other outlets. The most influential factor on people determining what they believe is the actual news, their perception of news, and I differentiate that from the real news, is television. That is still the most prevalent source of information or misinformation, as we would say, for people. So there is a challenge. I do, however, think that in the future, the net is going to be sort of a one-stop shopping where you're really going to see movies, TV, download email, and as the generational divide starts to narrow because people grow older, they'll grow up with the net, and I do think it will be perhaps, if not the major source of news, right up there with television.
Yeah, it'll be another appliance. We're with the web right now where TV was in 1952. Arguably, I'm taking it that that's your point. Jeff Milchen, your thoughts. You're actually putting together a grassroots on-the-ground organization. That doesn't require the web, does it?
Well, certainly websites are a valuable tool in advancing that effort, but I agree with the caller. I think there's been tremendous emphasis on email and websites, but there's a great danger there in distracting us from the hard truth that creating a social movement and changing the basic structures that I think many of your listeners are interested in requires face-to-face organizing. It's hard work. It involves talking with people face-to-face, going through the hard work of organizing, coming to agreement with people on finding out where your commonalities and differences are. None of that can be done over the web. So, there's absolutely no substitute for community grassroots organizing.
Yeah,
so,
well said. Jeff Milchen with ReclaimDemocracy.org. We're also talking with Mark Carlin, founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com. Our best of the rest of the news segment. Speaking of protests, Diane in Grand Rapids, listening to us on WTKG there in Grand Rapids. You have something on the Calvin College protests. George Bush is coming to town this weekend, eh?
Yes, and I'd like to direct your webmasters there to a site. It's an e-group, and if you just put "our commencement is not your platform" into Google or another search engine, you'll find it. And it's alumni and Calvin students and interested others from all over the country who are engaged in a really productive dialogue about what it means to have this guy come to your school and speak at your graduation. And it's very educational. It's something that everybody from all over the country can participate in this dialogue. Even if you can't make it to Grand Rapids for the protest, they're selling T-shirts to express dissatisfaction with having their commencements either enhanced or ruined by the appearance of George Bush. Jim Wallace was here, and he had told students that they could hand out Sojourner's bumper stickers that said, "I am not, a good person is not a Democrat or a Republican."
Yeah.
I'm not right. phrasing it correctly. But 300 people showed up for the few students who asked Jim Wallace to speak about what they should do about commencement.
That's great. Diane, so...
And there's a demonstration tomorrow at 1 at the Woodland Mall, starting at Woodland Mall.
Great. And starting at 1. And Mark Carlin, BuzzFlash.com, you guys are super good at hyperlinking to these sorts of things. Do you already have this up on your site?
Yes, we posted... an interesting story, and there were a few different accounts of it, but a third of the faculty at this college took out an ad in the Grand Rapids paper protesting Bush's visit. Now, this is a Christian college. Michigan happens to have a number of kind of noted sort of Calvinist evangelical colleges. And Karl Rove, we recall the story, how this came about. He asked the president of the college, sought him out, said, "Can Bush be the commencement speaker there?" And the president said, "Sure," not knowing that his good portion of the faculty, a third of the faculty, and that's an enormous amount at a Christian college, objected to the visit, as did a very, very large number of the students. We should point out, as I'm sure your caller will agree, Grand Rapids is the home of Gerald Ford. It's also the kind of Calvinist, right-wing, kind of hardcore Christian area of Michigan.
Yeah, it's where I was born.
Well, then you know.
I know all about it.
And so for a third of the faculty at that college to object publicly in a newspaper and actually put their own money together for this ad is really quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it really and truly is. Mark, thanks a lot for that, and thank you, Diane, for the call. Let's go back to the phone lines. They're still just jammed up here. Hang on just a second. Mark in Middlesex, Vermont, was the next caller here. Hey, Mark.
Yeah, hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm listening up here and listening to a different program. I'm not sure what's going on here. You're talking about digital divide there and over here.
Oh, okay. Mark, I'm gonna put you on hold here. You're listening to the last hour when we were talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, which is time delayed for 1 hour on the station that you're listening to, WDEV in Vermont. And that's what's going on. Some stations run the show live, some take programs and move them around, and so that's what's happening. Armin in Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
I'm convinced that there is a conspiracy in this country And there's different players and people partaking in it. And it's directed against the blacks. And it's crack cocaine and drugs in their area and neighborhoods. And I'm convinced that this conspiracy is not unlike the conspiracy that the British used against the Chinese in the Opium Wars to keep a race and group of people at each other, oppressed and downtrodden, for the purpose of advancing their own agenda.
Well, you're not the first person to say that, Armin. I'm curious what Mark Carlin and Jeff Milchen think about it. Mark, actually, let me go to Jeff first.
Can I say
Mark,
one other thing, though?
Yeah,
Tom?
Real quick, sure.
Real quick, I want to say this. You know, Louis Farrakhan, whether you like him, hate him, or whatever, I don't agree with some of his radical ideology, but he makes the point. It's not the black men and the blacks that own the ships, the airplanes that bring the stuff in, and the banks that launder the money.
Oh, I know. Malcolm X talked about that as well in his autobiography. It's
so I'm convinced
spot on.
That this group's made up of different organizations and groups of people that have the reasoning behind their partaking in this conspiracy.
Yeah.
I think it's wrong. We're never going to move ahead as a culture until we clean up these filthy pigs at the top.
Okay, and well said. Mark, Jeff Milchen, your thoughts on this. This, in part, we had a caller in the last hour who was talking about, or the last half hour, about she's a real estate agent, and she was just showing a house, or went to look at a house that was being listed, and there was a crack house next door. And, like, you know, this is in a Republican neighborhood, and it flipped her out.
I don't agree with the caller. I think it's about some people having an interest in getting high and other people willing to take some risks to make money, providing them with what they want.
Okay, so you don't see a conspiracy here, or you know, the whole thing about the CIA selling drugs into the ghettos and things. Didn't they apologize for that back in the 80s?
Yes, they did. Actually, this is Mark Carlin, editor of BuzzFlash. I have no personal knowledge of this, so I can't say whether it's true or not. But there was a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News who, in fact, just committed suicide about 2 months ago. And the San Jose Mercury News ran a three-part series, I believe, in 1996, that is part of the Iran-Contra affair, that indeed crack cocaine was introduced into Los Angeles as part of the overall arms for hostages deal.
It was the Ollie North, the thing that he was running. They were out of a ranch in, as I want to say, Richardson, Texas. I could be wrong, but somewhere in Texas, they were flying guns down and bringing cocaine back, selling the cocaine to finance buying more guns.
And this was actually documented. It was it quickly denounced by the government at the time, but it was actually documented in a CIA review of the Iran-Contra affair somewhat later. So
yeah.
It's not an entirely fictitious theory, since the CIA basically agreed that it did happen. Whether or not that was a conspiracy to place crack cocaine in every city was not the issue. But
yeah.
I think it's fair to say, based on the San Jose Mercury News article and the CIA admission, that indeed the CIA was involved with two guys from the Contra movement who were selling. It did introduce crack cocaine to Los Angeles.
Right. I think Jeff's point that it's the free market is probably a valid one, though, that, you know, the CIA was taking advantage of the free market as well. They were just making a few bucks on the side and doing it to finance Reagan's, you know, guns to the Contras deal, as opposed to some sort of a race war, as Armin was suggesting. In any case, let's, you know, this is something that we'll probably never resolve. Let's move along to Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hey, Roy.
Hey, good morning. And BuzzFlash is my third. I look at it third every morning. I look at Sludge Factor first, World Debt News Daily next, and then I go to BuzzFlash to find out what the answer is to their lies and crap. And I really appreciate the work you guys do.
Thank
I have
you.
One question and then one comment. The question is, will the graduates and the guests at the graduation up there in Michigan have to sign loyalty oaths and take their T-shirts off? The comment is, as far as the grassroots organizing, Move On is doing a filibuster around the country starting Tuesday. We're organizing here in Albuquerque. We're going to filibuster in front of the office building where Domenici's office is. And I think everybody that's listening to this program ought to be going up and signing up with Move On. If there's one already going on, sign up and join it. If there's not one, sign up and be the
there you go. For the folks listening.
Organize it. Get active, get active, get active, get active.
There you
Educate.
Go. There you
Educate,
go.
Agitate, and motivate.
There you go. Well said, Roy. And that for the folks listening on KRSN in Santa Fe. We've got about a minute before we've got to take a break here. Jeff, your thoughts?
I can't say I have much to add on that topic, Tom. I think that's been pretty well covered.
It's what you guys are doing at ReclaimDemocracy.org. Educate,
well,
agitate.
Sure, on that topic. We're trying to put our focus on a proactive movement-building agenda, not reacting to what the Republicans are throwing at people on a day-to-day basis. And so that's our great struggle, is the constant tendency of most people and most organizations, especially the better known well-funded groups, are reactive campaigns one after another. But if we keep just playing defense, we're never going to get anywhere. So we're out to try to build a democracy movement.
Well said. We're going to take a 5-minute break here. If you guys can stick around, we'll take a few more calls before we get up to the top of the hour.
Great.
Okay,
sure.
Great. Mark Carlin with us with BuzzFlash.com. Jeff Milchen with us with ReclaimDemocracy.org and WalmartFacts.biz. Tom Hartman with you, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's never too late to start all over again.
And welcome back, my friends.
To love the people, you cause the pain, and help them learn to live.
Yeah, it's not too late to start over. We can start democracy again in the United States. What an idea. Take it back from these wacko right-wingers. Anyhow, welcome back to our program. We have with us Mark Carlin, the founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com, Jeff Milchen, who runs and founded, as I recall, right? ReclaimDemocracy.org, Jeff?
Yes, and Tom, can I just jump in for a minute? You mentioned WalmartFacts.biz.
Yes.
But in fact, the Walmart Corporation has successfully stripped that domain away from my control by going to the World Intellectual Property Organization, claiming that that is an infringement on their intellectual property rights. So that no longer has information critical of Walmart. For that, folks should go to ReclaimDemocracy.org/Walmart.
Okay, great. Jesus, I'll have to update your bio here. Thank you, Jeff. Okay, let's one final phone call here. Tom in Minnesota. We've got about 2.5 minutes. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Good. Yeah, Tom, I wanted to talk about, again, Orwellian newspeak and reinventing language, and that audio you played of Galloway, that was a perfect example how that guy understands the soundbite culture and how to frame the debate and the power of repetition. He said, "I told the world contrary to your claims." He must have said that about 6-7 times.
Yeah.
It was powerful. And the Democrats have got to learn how to reframe the debate and control it. Now, I wanted to get on how these guys, the conservatives, are trying, and, they've taken words and turned them into pejoratives, like they took liberal, made into a bad word. They've redefined democracy to mean crony capitalism. And now the new word, and I'm noticing this on talk radio, I noticed in David Brooks' piece, is the word secularism.
Right.
They're redefining
it. They're redefining it as atheism, when secular actually means civil society and does not mean atheist. Good point. Mark Carlin, Jeff Milchen, we have about a minute left. Your thoughts on what Tom just said, and also I'm curious what you see coming up in the news over the next week. Mark, you go first.
I absolutely agree with him. Galloway's performance was, BAFO standing ovation. But he does know how to frame in the George Lakoff sort of way. But I would also add that man has a spine, which there is no replacement for.
Yeah, well said.
That is an important factor. The second thing, as far as news coming up, I do think that we will once again see a Bush diversion, as we saw with a Newsweek episode this week.
Another big one.
And of course, we're going to see some sort of resolution on the so-called filibuster issue.
Okay, we're out of time. Jeff, I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to get to you with your thoughts on this, but ReclaimDemocracy.org. Jeff Milchen, thanks so much for being with us also.
Quite welcome.
And Jeff Milchen, Reclaim Democracy, one of the great organizations. BuzzFlash.com, one of the finest news websites out there. Check them both out. Mark Carlin, Jeff Milchen, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Thanks, guys. It's a Tom Hartman program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, back with you. Usha in the chat room. Hartman Galloway 08. I don't think so. The New York Times today, this an absolutely tragic story, an absolutely tragic story. Are we, this Bush administration and the right-wing machine that supports it has become such a culture of death. For example, a nationally syndicated talk show host yesterday, Glenn Beck.
Hang on, let me just tell you what I'm thinking. I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore, and I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, you know, and I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong?
Yeah. See, these are the kind of questions that right-wingers ask themselves. And here now, at the same time, we have the New York Times. In a U.S. report, brutal details of two Afghan inmates' deaths. If you thought the Newsweek story, which, by the way, was old news, and now the Red Cross came out this morning and said, oh, well, what Newsweek reported, we've been saying that for 2 years. We documented that to the U.S. Army. We reported that. I mean, this is no secret. The right-wingers would have you think that the meltdown in Afghanistan, the failure of our puppet government in Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, the former Unocal oil company executive, whose job was to build a gas pipeline across Afghanistan back 10 years ago, and who is now building a gas pipeline across Afghanistan, the right-wingers would have you think that his failures, that the reason that the Taliban is back, the reason the warlords are running the country, the reason why Karzai doesn't even control the entire city of Kabul, the reason why the women are back in their burqas, the reason why they're killing people for drinking alcohol and speaking blasphemy has to do with an article in Newsweek. Oh, it's the liberal elite New York Press. No, I'm sorry. It's the failed policies of the failed Bush administration. Junior has done very, very poorly. His daddy did a much better job, and his daddy didn't do all that great himself. And here we have now in the New York Times, anyhow, if you think the Newsweek story was a big deal, the New York Times now, even as the young Afghan man was dying before them, his American jailers continued to torment him, writes Tim Golden in today's Times. The prisoner, a slight 22-year-old taxi driver known only as Dilwar, was hauled from his cell at the detention center in Bagram, Afghanistan, at around 2 a.m. to answer questions about a rocket attack on an American base. When he arrived in the interrogation room, an interpreter who was present said his legs were bouncing uncontrollably in the plastic chair and his hands were numb. He had been chained by the wrists to the top of his cell for much of the previous 4 days. Mr. Dilawar was asked for a drink of water, and one of the two interrogators, Specialist Joshua R. Klaus, 21, picked up a large plastic bottle. But first he punched a hole in the bottom, the interpreter said. So as the prisoner fumbled weakly with the cap, the water poured out over his orange prison scrubs. The soldier then grabbed the bottle back and began squirting the water forcefully into Mr. Dilwar's face. Come on, drink! The interpreter said Specialist Klaus had shouted as the prisoner gagged on the spray. Drink! At the interrogator's behest, a guard tried to force the young man to his knees, but his legs, which had been pummeled by guards for several days, could no longer bend. An interrogator told Mr. Dilwar that he could see a doctor after they finished with him. When he was finally sent back to his cell, though, the guards were instructed only to chain the prisoner back to the ceiling. "Leave him up," one of the guards quoted Specialist Klaus as saying. Several hours passed before an emergency room doctor finally saw Mr. Dilwar. By then he was dead, his body beginning to stiffen. It would be many months before Army investigators learned a final horrific detail. Most of the interrogators had believed Mr. Dilwar was an innocent man who simply drove his taxi past the American base at the wrong time. This at the Bagram collection point where they were gathering people to send to Guantanamo Bay in Afghanistan, to our concentration camp. This, not some report from some left-wing organization or the Red Cross, this from a 2,000-page confidential file compiled by the United States Army. The New York Times adds, this article by Tim Golden, in sworn statements to Army investigators, soldiers describe one female interrogator with a taste for humiliation stepping on the neck of one prostate detainee and kicking another in the genitals. They tell of a shackled prisoner being forced to roll back and forth on the floor of a cell, kissing the boots of his two interrogators as he went. Yet another prisoner is made to pick up plastic bottle caps out of a drum mixed with excrement and water as part of a strategy to soften him up for questioning. Now, I am not sharing this with you to say our soldiers are bad people. They are not. The young Americans who went over to Afghanistan and over to Iraq are just average, ordinary Americans, by and large. Very, you know, brave. I salute their bravery, their willingness to serve their country, and I salute their patriotism. The point that I'm making is this is what happens in war. This is simply what happens in war. And this is a war that we did not need to have. This is a war that George W. Bush decided he wanted to have back in 2002. Karl Rove got together with him, and they planned this thing as part of an election strategy to help the Republicans take control of the House and Senate in 2002 and to get George W. Bush Jr. reelected in 2004. Pure and simple. Oh, people say, but they wanted the oil. There's all that oil in Iraq. Yeah, there is. And Afghanistan, they wanted the pipeline, sure. But they could have gotten it with money. They could have bought it. It would have been cheaper. Where's $300 billion that we have spent so far? It's an absolutely mind-boggling amount of money. It would have been much, much cheaper to simply buy the oil or the gas. But then George wouldn't have had his war. And without his war, he wouldn't have been reelected. Because he knew, and Karl Rove knew, that no American president during time of war has ever failed to get reelected. And no party in power during time of war has ever failed to continue in power. Very simple. Once the war is over, the parties flip. Look at what happened in 1946. The year after World War II ended, the Republicans took control of the House and Senate. The year after the war ended, Dwight Eisenhower was elected. You know, Harry Truman was president, the Democrat, and the war in Korea was very unpopular. Dwight Eisenhower's campaign slogan was "Vote for peace, vote for Eisenhower." He ran as the George McGovern candidate. He was the peace candidate. And he won. So the point is that George said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have this war. Or Carl said it. And thus we have, again from the New York Times, one captain nicknamed members of the 3rd Platoon the Testosterone Gang. Several were devout bodybuilders. Upon arriving in Afghanistan, a group of the soldiers decorated their tent with a Confederate flag, one soldier said. Some of the MPs took a particular interest in an emotionally disturbed Afghan detainee who was known to eat his feces and mutilate himself with concertina wire. The soldiers kneed the man repeatedly in the legs and at one point chained him with his arms straight up in the air, Specialist Calloway told investigators. They also nicknamed him Timmy after a disabled child in the animated television series South Park. One of the guards who beat the prisoner also taught him to screech like the cartoon character, Specialist Calloway said. Eventually, the man was sent home. Yes, this is how you win the hearts and minds of people. And this is what happens in war. Let us never forget George Galloway, member of Parliament, recently re-elected by his people, by his constituents, sent back to Parliament in the United Kingdom, former member of the Labour Party, George Galloway's comments to Senator Norm Coleman, soon to be ex-Senator Norm Coleman. I believe it's 2008 he's up for re-election. Old Norm Coleman from Minnesota sitting there, the Republican senator sitting there with his big toothy grin, trying to act like, you know, he had this guy and he was gonna really take him apart. He was gonna dissect him. Didn't quite work out that way. George Galloway.
I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq. And I told the world that your case for the war was a pack of lies. I told the world that Iraq, contrary to your claims, did not have weapons of mass destruction. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to Al-Qaeda. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to the atrocity on 9/11/2001. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that the Iraqi people would resist a British and American invasion of their country, and that the fall of Baghdad would not be the beginning of the end, but merely the end of the beginning.
Very straightforward. I told the world, I told you, Senator Coleman, you Republicans and you Democrats who went along with them, I told you, he said. Oh, but George would tell us. Oh, but the mainstream media would tell us. The rest of the world thought Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. These TV, whatever you call them, I can't call them news reporters or commentators. They sit there when these cons come on with these talking points. Oh, everybody thought that he had it, and they never challenged them. I'm sorry, everybody didn't think he had weapons of mass destruction. That's why everybody didn't join us.
Senator, in everything I said about Iraq, I turned out to be right, and you turned out to be wrong. And 100,000 people have paid with their lives. 1,600 of them American soldiers sent to their deaths on a pack of lies. 15,000 of them wounded, many of them disabled forever on a pack of lies. If the world had listened to Kofi Annan, whose dismissal you demanded, if the world had listened to President Chirac, who you want to paint as some kind of corrupt traitor, if the world had listened to me and the anti-war movement in Britain, we would not be in the disaster that we are in today. Senator, this is the mother of all smoke screens.
And then the American press, the Associated Press and other media take that, Senator, this is the mother of all smoke screens, quote of his, and they portray it as if this was his response to Senator Norm Coleman saying, oh, you have something to do with the oil for food scandal. And as if he was replying to that. No, I'm sorry. He was replying to the fact that you, Senator Coleman, and your party, and the Democrats who are complicit with you, lied us into a war, and people are dead as a result of it. And it's wrong. It's just simply wrong. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Coming up, a Bolton alert, stem cell alert, Patriot Act alert, the RNC talking points for the day. We've got a lot of news here. What an amazing day, and it's the end of the week at that. But first, if you'd like to call in and be on the program, if you have comments, questions, concerns, arguments, criticisms, critiques, commentaries, pontifications, postulations, theorizations, 1-866-889-4748. 8894, our telephone number, toll-free nationwide, 1-866-889-8894, or from outside the United States, 503-248-0620. Amy in San Diego on the line. Hey, Amy. Oop, hang on just a second. Let me turn up the volume control. There you go. Now I can hear you.
Okay. I was just wondering, are you, I'm sure you are, aware of a few of the states that have the clean money campaigns?
Yes, like Maine and Arizona, the two most notable.
Yes, yes. I was thinking that is an excellent way to get around the Buckley versus Vallejo thing, eliminating the need for the candidates to even need the corporation's money.
Yeah, and in fact, the city of Portland, which is where I live now, just passed, day before yesterday, I believe, a similar plan of public financing. If a candidate can get, as I recall, it's $1,005 contributions,
then they
qualify for $100,000 in public financing. But they have to agree not to spend any more than that. You know, that there's in other words, they just buy into the public financing thing. I think it's a great idea.
Well, the one we're trying to start one. Well, not me. There's one in California called Clean CAClean.org,
mm-hmm.
and I'm volunteering to help them. And
good.
What their thing is they'll match dollar for dollar what someone that's not a clean candidate will get. So it eliminates the person trying to out-fund the other guy, because if they're going to get the same amount, what's the point?
Right. This is what happened in the last presidential election. You ended up with both Kerry and Bush pulling out of the federal matching funds program because it put a cap on what they could spend but didn't cap their opponent.
Right. And tomorrow I'm going to be showing a free screening of the corporation, and then afterwards I'm going to give a presentation about this to get people involved. And I just wanted to...
Good on you.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to tell everybody that's listening, it's so easy to do something. This is so simple. I just went to my library. I'm showing it for free. It's all it costs me is my time. And then I put it on different progressive websites down here in San Diego. And it's so simple. Anyone can do it. It's not a big deal at all.
That's absolutely wonderful, Amy. You are one of my heroes. You are doing the work.
Thank you. I just wanted to say one more thing. There's a website. It's called publiccampaign.org, and anyone listening to this can go there, find their state, and they can do this.
Okay, publiccampaign.org, and did you say caclean.org was the...
The one in California is caclean.org.
caclean.org, good. I'm sure that Arnold would call that a special interest group, right? Arnold.
Well, I have a different name for Arnold, but we won't discuss that on the air.
Well, Herr Gruppenführer, perhaps?
Something like that.
He's a piece of work. You know, I'm wondering, down in California, is this movie, The Smartest Guys in the Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, I just saw this last week here in Portland, and there's the whole thing in there about Arnold having the secret meeting with Ken Lay just before California essentially got raped by Enron.
Yeah.
And it certainly appears that his becoming governor was preordained, that they used the energy crisis to bring down Gray Davis and install him, and that he's the toady of the oil companies. Do the people of California get that?
The people that are progressive and liberals that I've talked to, we all get it. But I certainly don't think it's anything in the mainstream. I don't think the average person down here thinks that, but we all are very aware of that.
Wasn't there a lawsuit trying to force him to disclose, you know, what happened in that private meeting that he had with Lay?
You know, I don't know. I know that there was a lawsuit against, Cheney to release
him, but
I don't know about.
Okay.
About.
Well, I'll have to track it down. Amy, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Good on you. Keep up the great work. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. You're in the Democracy Zone. Talk radio for the rest of us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell her no, 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 no.
Yes.
No,
no, no, Dr. Frist. No. No Priscilla Owen. No Janice Rogers Brown. No. No more cranky right-wing judges. No, 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 no.
We interrupt Tom Hartman with this John Bolton alert.
Ah, yes, the John Bolton alert. John Bolton may have lied under oath, reports the Center for American Progress. During his testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, John Bolton testified under oath that he made no efforts to have discipline imposed on a CIA analyst who had disagreed with his intelligence assessments. Yet a report released by minority committee members reveals that Bolton actually pushed for months to have the analyst removed from his job or otherwise disciplined, the Associated Press reports. Bolton and State Department ally Otto Reich went so far as to draft a letter to then-CIA Director George Tenet that urged the immediate replacement of the analyst, a fellow by the name of Fulton Armstrong, and indicated that Bolton and Reich would take several measures on their own, including excluding Mr. Armstrong from official meetings at the State Department and official travel in the Western Hemisphere. Our John Bolton alert for the day. A Patriot Act, a look at the Patriot Act. The chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee is now ignoring 43 states, 383 communities that have passed resolutions saying, please scale back the Patriot Act. Ignoring the will of we the people, the Republican chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee is working on a bill that would renew the Patriot Act and expand government powers in the name of fighting terrorism, letting the FBI subpoena records without permission from a judge or grand jury. Excuse me. So, yeah, there you go. It's the shredding the Constitution merrily, merrily, merrily on their way. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alan on the line. Hey, Alan, it's not showing on the screen where you're calling from. What's up?
I'm calling from Ohio.
Oh, great.
I listen to your show every day by downloading it off the White Rose Society.
Uh-huh.
Really good.
Thank you.
Good service.
Yeah, White Rose does a great job, and they run the show 24 hours a day, 24/7. It's great. It's like our own radio station.
I'm curious about the word socialism. It seems like it's a word that's been misused by the right in this country, and over in Europe, it seems like it's used a lot over there. But people don't think of communism when they use that word. I don't think.
Yeah.
Soviet style communism.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Well, the problem is that there's no clean or clear definition of it, and it means different things to different people in different places. Socialism, by and large, is more of an economic system than a political system, first of all. And the Soviet Union turned it into a political system, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR. And so that, of course, is where socialism got painted with the communist in part of it. And also Karl Marx used the word socialism to describe what ultimately they were you know, calling communism. And so, you know, there is that kind of contamination of it. And that's why a lot of people are kind of uncomfortable with the word. Bernie Sanders, for example, used to call himself a socialist. He doesn't call himself that anymore because the word has become, you know, polluted, as it were. But basically, I wouldn't call myself a socialist. I would say I'm a small D Democrat. I believe in democracy. But socialism as an economic system, you know, exists in the context of democracy. So you have a democracy where the people decide that they want to have some regulation over capitalism, over how business is conducted, so that capitalism operates in a way that also inures to the benefit of the people. So they'll do a couple of different things. They will regulate business. They'll say, hey, you can't dump poisons into our air and water, unless we decide that you can. So, which, you know, generally they won't decide to, but there are risk benefit. You know, do you want to have steel? Do you want to have plastics? There's a certain amount of this stuff you're going to have to put up with, unfortunately. And secondly, that there would be, that we will tax ourselves, that we will say to ourselves, okay, we are going to say in our community, we want to have schools where people can go for free. They don't have to pay for the schools. The schools aren't just for the wealthy. We want to have health care, and it's not just for the wealthy. These are rights of citizenship. We want to have freedom of speech. We want to have our rights of way publicly protected, things like this. And so, you know, the big argument becomes, when is something socialist? Back in the 1930s, the foaming at the mouth Republicans, by and large, and there are a few Democrats, but by and large it was the Republicans who were fighting against the New Deal, against Roosevelt in 1933, 34, 35, 36 in particular, during that era, they were saying that Social Security was socialism and that the minimum wage laws were socialism. And, in fact, the Supreme Court had struck these things down in their earlier versions back in the 19-teens as socialism and said that they were unconstitutional. And that's, you know, Janice Rogers Brown has said that they're socialism, and that's why the cons want to get her, you know, on the appeals court so they can get her on the Supreme Court so she'll start striking down these things. So it's a matter of opinion is the problem, Alan. It's like, who knows?
Well, that's a long answer, and I like it. I listened to it several times to get it.
Okay.
I think of it as with the commons.
Yeah.
That too.
Well, that's why I just kind of stay away from the word, because it means so many different things to so many different people. And I think really, ultimately, what it comes down to, as Tom from Minnesota is so good at pointing out to all of us, is that it really comes down to democracy as a political system. And, you know, capitalism, free enterprise, socialism, they're economic systems. But in a democracy, we all collectively decide what our economic system is going to be. And there is no pure economic system. There is no pure socialism, pure capitalism, pure communism, pure free energy. There is none. They're all blends and hybrids. So really what it gets back to ultimately is democracy.
I like that answer.
Good. Well, thank you very much for the call, Alan. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. And thanks for listening and for the nice plug for White Rose Society. We got some great web streams, White Rose Society, RadioPower.org, and American FM on Live 365. And, of course, the fine folks at CRN Digital, also getting us on and cable systems. The GOP now and their good buddies, their corporate buddies, threatening the media. Did you catch this? David Sirota put this out on his blog. David Sirota, formerly of the Center for American Progress. He says, from the "if it smells like a conspiracy, it probably is one" department, check this out. He says, at the same time the corporate-owned Bush White House is desperately trying to intimidate the media, one of the Republican Party's major financial contributors is now threatening the media as well. As Daniel Gross notes, and he's referring to an article in Bloomberg News, as Daniel Gross notes, the financial firm Morgan Stanley is essentially letting publications know that they will be financially punished if those publications have the nerve to aggressively cover corporate scandals. And David Sirota continues, it seems big business in the Bush administration will only be happy if reporters write glowing stories about how everything is just dandy in America, how corporate America is a bastion of honesty, and how the Bush administration is led by angelic heroes. Maybe they'd like to simply eliminate news coverage altogether. We will see if the media cowers. Let's hope they don't. Well, I will make a prediction. They will. They will. Because it's the media today, it's all about money. It's all about money. And unfortunately, well, I mean, it's appropriate that there be a part of the media that is all about money. That's the entertainment part. That's you know, if you're listening to music, radio station, they sell advertising, they make money. Talk radio, for that matter, is, you know, they sell advertising, they make money. But news should be, in my opinion, should be sacrosanct. News should be, I'm lacking a word here. You know, I don't want to elevate it to divine, but you know, it should be separate, and it was from, I believe it was 1937 when the Telecommunications Act was first passed, creating the Federal Communications Commission. Might have been earlier than that. Might have been 27. Anyhow, from that time until 1987, when Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine, and 1996 when Bill Clinton signed this horrendous Telecommunications Act that allowed for massive accumulations within the media, that we've seen that these large combines, you know, CBS, NBC, ABC, companies that are really not in the broadcasting business doing broadcasting. And as a result, you know, they're saying to the people who are in the news business, it's not so much whether it's news or not, it's whether it makes money or not. And it used to be that we would say, if you're going to broadcast on the airwaves, if you're going, you know, or if you're going to be on cable, I mean, this is why you have public access cable. If you're going to use the public rights of way, the roadways, the telephone poles, the, you know, the things that we the people maintain with our tax dollars, if you're going to use these to string your cables on, if you're going to use the public airwaves, the radio frequencies, if you're going to use the satellite frequencies for that matter, then there's a certain obligation you have to we the people. We all understand. Thomas Jefferson pointed out that in order for a democracy to work, you must have an informed electorate. We must have an informed electorate. Otherwise, you can't have a functional democracy. And so to fulfill that obligation, to fulfill that public service obligation that was there in the FCC code right up until Reagan stopped enforcing it in 87, it's still there, by the way. It just hasn't been enforced. What radio and television stations did, and newspapers as well were regulated, and how ownership could be concentrated, what they did was they said, okay, the news is part of our public service obligation. Well, you know, everybody knew about public service announcements. This is the thing I think most people who have never been inside the radio or television business don't understand. Everybody knows about PSAs. You know, the Ladies Garden Club is going to be meeting Thursday at 9 o'clock at the Civic Center on Northwest Main and 16th Street. Okay, that kind of stuff. Everybody knows that radio and TV stations used to run that kind of stuff because they were required to, and many of them just don't do it anymore because they're not required to anymore. So why use up the time? I mean, you can sell commercials during that time. Okay, so everybody understands that, and I think some people feel a little uneasy about it, but, you know, hey, that's the way it is. What people don't realize is that the news was part of that. The news was part of the way that radio and television stations and newspapers, also to earn their discount on mailing, and I know I've ranted about this before. In fact, I think I ranted about it yesterday, but nonetheless, it's worth repeating, that this was the way that they fulfilled their public service obligation, and their... It's not happening anymore. Now it's all about infotainment. And that's fine if you're talking about, you know, some crackpot talk show here, you know, on the right or the left. And I'll be the first to say, here I am in that category. I'm not trying to tell you I'm here to report the news. I'm here to comment on the news. I'm here to share with you my point of view on the news and let you share your point of view on the news on this program. But the news itself is something that should be as close as to sacred as you can get in a secular world, you know, in the world of the commons. Speaking of sacred and secular, South Korean scientists have dramatically sped up the creation of human embryonic stem cells, growing 11 new batches that for the first time were a genetic match for injured or sick patients. Now, this news story, this is AP medical writer Lauren Neergaard, has set off the Bush administration. The Bush administration has now come out and said, this is terrible. They are condemning the South Koreans. Because the South Koreans now have leaped way ahead of us. We here with the Flat Earth Society. We here with the Science? Department. The South Koreans have leaped way ahead of us on this thing and figured out how it used to take, last year, it took attempts with 242 donated human eggs to grow one batch of stem cells. This time it took an average of 17 eggs per batch and 14 if they were from women younger than 30. So they've dramatically increased the efficiency with which they do this. This doesn't involve fetuses. It doesn't involve abortions. And the way that it works is you take this, you know, these eggs and, you know, that have undifferentiated stem cell that can become undifferentiated stem cells, and you inject into them the DNA from a patient. Okay, you've got an egg from some donor. You know, women go into fertility clinics and they take drugs that cause them to release a whole bunch of eggs, and you harvest some of those eggs. And then you take the DNA from a person who's sick, who has a spinal cord injury, or who has diabetes, or who has Parkinson's or something. You take a little, you know, from a skin cell, and you inject that DNA into the nucleus of the stem cell, of the egg cell. As the egg has started to divide, you split off some of those cells, and you inject it into the nucleus of that cell. And that now will become a cell, which can become any cell in the body, but it has the genetic profile of the patient, not of the person who donated the original egg. Following along? This procedure is called, by the way, in the most technical sense, it's called cloning. It's not creating another person. It's simply creating cells that match another person. So now you can take those undifferentiated stem cells that carry the DNA of the patient, and you can put them in that person's pancreas, and they'll produce insulin. You can put them in their brain, and they'll produce L-dopamine. You can put them in their spinal cord, and they'll produce nerve cells. Or that's the theory, and it's actually worked with mice. And then now they're working on doing it with humans. And so the Bush administration, because this is technically cloning, and because in America people think, when you say cloning, they think of Dolly the sheep. They think you're talking about creating human babies so that you can, like, take parts from them or something. I mean, most people, you say, should we make human clones in order to save people's lives? They say no, because what they're thinking of is you're talking about, hey, you know, clone Ralph and then take his liver. No, that's not what it's talking about. But the Bush administration would love to perpetuate that myth, because it feeds into the... the cultists with, you know, among them, the Reverend Moon and his Washington Times, and the extreme fringe of the Catholic Church and some of the Protestant denominations, the cultists among them. It feeds into this. And so the Bush administration has come out today and condemned South Korea for this research because they say it involves cloning. And I guarantee you tonight, when you watch the news, that's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear the Republican talking points. It's about cloning, not what actually happened. It's about saving lives. And no lives are taken at all. 10 minutes before the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Breathe in the air.
And welcome back. Not the most upbeat bumper music, but well, it's still pretty. It's beautiful music. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Stop Vote Pirates in our chat room. You can get to the chat room by going to TomHartman.com and clicking live chat, although we're kind of wrapping it up for the day right now. This is the last 3 minutes of the program. But Stop Vote Pirates asked the question, wasn't Jose Padilla supposed to be released on the 14th of last month? What happened? Why hasn't there been anything about it? And I had to say, I don't know. And so, you know, we've been poking around. Oh, there's a couple of links in there, Louise, for you to get into the chat room real quickly. Anyhow, Louise has been looking for it. She said there's no stories with his name in Google News that she's been able to find in any news source at all in the last 2 weeks. So, you know, what happened? What has happened to this guy? What, you know, what's going on? Good question. I honestly don't know and intend to find out. We'll be looking at it over the weekend as time goes on here. Meanwhile, here we have now Newsweek, of course, being vilified by the right wing as the source of all hatred of Americans is Newsweek, right? The reason why they're laying an American flag in front of the mosque in Iraq for people to walk on as they go into the mosque is because of Newsweek. This is what the right wing would have you think. This is what the cons would have you think. This is an attempt by the cons, by the Republicans, by the Bushies, by these one-stater Stalinists, these one-party Stalinists. It's an attempt by them. Boy, does that sound like hyperbole to call them? Actually, no. You know, Stalin's idea was that there could only be one party in a state, period. Only one party. Now, certainly they haven't killed anywhere near as many people as Stalin did, but the philosophy is not that different politically, and it concerns me. In any case, what they're trying to do is place the blame for a disastrous policy, a failed foreign policy, a failed war policy that was really just in place there to help George Jr. get himself reelected or elected. They're trying to place the blame for this in Newsweek, and now the International Committee of the Red Cross comes out and says it has given the Pentagon multiple reports about mishandling the Quran. The Pentagon confirmed they had received these reports. This is nothing new. This has got nothing to do with the Red with the Newsweek. This is an old story. And what people are really upset about is that we've screwed up this war and occupied their country. It's time to get out. Thanks for being with us this week. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.